Hey, this is Eddie Spaghetti from the greatest rock and roll band in the world, the Supersuckers.
Hey, this is Joe from the Mises.
This is Adam Franklin from Slow Driver.
This is Artie Lang from the Howard Stern Show.
Hey, this is John from the Fed.
Hey, this is Rick Kubik, drummer from Natarose.
This is Josh Hayden from Spain.
Matt Sharp from The Rentals, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to The Dark Stuff Podcast.
And you're listening to The Dark Stuff Podcast.
The Dark Stuff Podcast.
Sorry it took so long. We had, for 25 years, we had a war group debate. Unresolved. We'll play some old shit if that's all right.
Hey everyone, it's me, Dave Splash, from thedarkstuff.com and The Dark Stuff Podcast. I'm here with episode 110. I'm referring to this show as the Replacements Roundtable. Let me explain. A little while ago, I got this idea that I wanted to discuss the Replacements reunion, so I put a little message out there on Facebook amongst my friends, asked if anyone who had seen the show would be interested in participating in some sort of group discussion. Got a couple of guys to participate, so the people you'll be hearing in this week's episode, besides myself, are Chip Duden, Mark Manor, and Joel Henriksen. These are all guys who are... men about town in Omaha, scenesters, as you will, to some degree. Three of us are in our 40s. One of us is in our early 20s, so we got a little bit of a difference in age perspective going on there. Chip and myself had seen the Replacements in their original incarnation, so we had a little bit of commentary on that. Mark and Joel, their first experience seeing the Replacements was at the reunion shows last year at Riot Fest. So, again, we're all coming at it from different places. We were originally going to do this discussion on Tuesday, June 3rd, which happens to be the same night as the Guided by Voices show. We thought, hey, that'll be perfect, right? We'll get together, we'll have a couple of drinks, we'll talk about the Replacements, get a little sloshed, head over to the Replacement show. Head over to the Guided by Voices show and make a whole night of it. Unfortunately, Mother Nature didn't cooperate, and we had torrential rains, we had flash flooding, we had tornado warnings and all this kind of stuff, so we had to call off that part of it. I did go to the Guided by Voices show, by the way. I wasn't going to miss that. So we rescheduled it for this Tuesday, June 10th. We held it at the Barley Street Tavern, which is a bar in Benson in Omaha, just a little bit off of Maple Street. And I don't know. I think it's a great discussion. I think if people like this and it goes well, we'll be potentially doing this for some other artists. And so let's just go ahead and get it started. This is us, the four of us guys, talking about the first time that we heard the Replacements. Hope you enjoy this. This is the Dark Stuff Podcast. Now, the four of us are here to do a discussion here on the Replacements, focusing a little bit on the Replacements reunion, because that's something that we all experienced as we all went to various shows. But I want to get the ball rolling with just sort of going, telling kind of your own personal Replacements story. So I thought I'd just ask everybody when was the first time they heard it, they could relay the experience. And I'll start because I have a very vivid memory of it. I was probably like 15 or 16, and I went to Homer's in the 132nd or Orchard Plaza, the old Homer's. Mike Fratt may have been working there as a very young Mike Fratt, but I'm not 100% sure on that part. I was a total metal kid, and I used to ride my bike to Homer's all the time and buy Motley Crue, Rat, whatever, and whatever was coming out. And I was a big Kiss fan. And I walked in, and there's a band playing. I don't recognize it. And the next song is them covering Black Diamond. So, of course, I'm immediately like, what the fuck is this, right? So I go running over to the front. They show me what the record is. I just buy it on site because I'm like, I figure, whatever. If these guys covered Kiss, then they must be pretty good. I took it home, and I hated the rest of it. I just couldn't stand it. I thought it was all terrible besides that song. But slowly over the next, like, 6 months, it became my favorite album. And then I realized I had missed Tim because it had already been out. Got into Pleased to Meet Me, and that was kind of where it began. And it started to slowly change my whole perspective on music because the old hair metal stuff didn't cut it after that. Like, I started seeing things in kind of a different way. And I credit that experience of walking in at that time at Homer's, hearing that song cue up on the turntable. If it had been on side two already by the time I got there, like, I probably never would have heard it, or maybe years later would have. That's my story.
Yeah. Mine's kind of similar to that. I mean, I'm a little older than you, so I actually, it was 84, I believe, that's when Let It Be came out, right? Mm-hmm. So 84. So I grew up a Kiss fan as well. Child of the 70s, you know, and getting first Kiss concert when I was 12 years old down in Pershing Auditorium and stuff. And, you know, grew up with Aerosmith, Zeppelin, Sabbath, that kind of environment. And then went to college, and had a bad year, like my freshman year, because I was the freshman social chairman, and girls liked some really bad stuff, and I was always prone to play whatever they wanted to. But anyway, so then I turned 20, and within a couple months of each other, Rolling Stone reviewed like two different albums that both kind of really set the tone for a lot of my musical interest to follow. That was kind of my first experiences from reading a couple of reviews and Rolling Stones and the Beat Farmers and then the Replacements, and that's what kind of got me going on them. And then seeing them, I think, later that year at the Drumstick when they came around as their first appearance.
Oh, I haven't heard the name of the Beat Farmers in like a really long time. I've heard about them in like Guadalcanal Diary.
There was that whole band
from that period.
Kind of cowpunk, you know, kind of is what they called it back then. You know, there's some really cool stuff, yeah.
All right, Mark?
My story's a little bit different. It's a little bit in reverse. It's similar to yours, in which I grew up listening to Rat and Motley Crue and, you know, all that hair metal and metal like Dokken and Dio and stuff like that. But, you know, there was a time where I started really, you know, becoming exposed to different music. You know, unfortunately, like, the Indigo Girls were one of them that brought me out, which is really strange, and R.E.M. and things like that. And I remember buying the Say Anything soundtrack, which is pretty much not even really, it's a replacement's name, you know, but it's not even really, it's just Westerberg at the very end for the most part. But, you know, Within Your Reach, you know, and I just love that song and pretty much anything off that soundtrack. That's how I discovered them and Fishbone and, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers were on there and Depeche Mode. And so I use that soundtrack as almost a starting point to really discover a lot of artists. And so, you know, then over the years, you know, just working at Homer's, you know, playing Replacements, you know, my friend Chad was really into them, who went with me and Joel to see the Replacements out. And,
I think you have to like the Replacements to work in a record store in the 80s or 90s. Sort of a requirement.
Staple of college radio.
That ended up being Chad's favorite band. He got super, super obsessed with them. And so whenever we were on road trips or anything, I mean, it was Replacements, Replacements, Replacements. And so I, you know, obviously fell in love with them too.
All right, Joel, you're up.
I
want to know how the kid got into him. That's my big curiosity.
Honestly, it was through Mark. I think we shared enough of it on Facebook. And then also, interesting enough, my Coachella experience, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, Billy Joe Armstrong. I grew up listening to Green Day. So he always kind of cited the Replacements as influence. So and then through that kind of...
Well, what are you doing here? What is Billy Joe doing here? Well,
I didn't know I could.
Dreams really do come true.
We'll see about that.
Excited around the whole Replacement story and
the whole mythology behind it. That's what it was too. There was so you never hear Replacements fans strictly talking about the music. There's always a story behind it because everywhere they went, there's a story to that story. Almost in the old days, I mean, eventually it became sort of all the shows were sort of the same and all that. But let's talk about. How many times you've seen them, and if you have, like, first time, and just maybe the best experience. Now, we'll break up the order this time and go with Mark.
Okay, well, I've only seen them once, which is last year, because I found them, you know, pretty much as they were
ending
as a band, and I will be going to see them in September in Minnesota on their homecoming show with Mr. Duden here.
Absolutely.
So that was my best time.
So that was the one and only time. Okay. Did you see any solo shows like Paul
sure.
Solo or Tommy? Or
saw Paul Westerberg at the Ranch Bowl, of course. Hung out on this tour bus with him, although I was a little more obsessed with his drummer at the time, which was Michael Bland, who was Prince's drummer. So I
he's the guy who's in Soul Sound now, right?
He's in Soul Sound now. And so I ended up really, because I'm a huge Prince fan. So, you know, while I, you know, I had my...
You're a Prince fan?
Yeah. So while I had my words with Westerberg and got autographs and all that, I really just focused in on Michael Bland on that
See, that,
bus,
that surprises you know? Me that he allowed that. I mean, because he always had that persona of just
being
edgy and kind of a prick, you know?
Yeah, we were shocked. He was great that night. He was very open with us, you know, just...
That's cool.
He let us on the bus and handed us drinks. And I've seen Tommy Stinson a couple times at the Ranch Bowl. Mm-hmm. I've seen...
All right, let's go with Chip.
Yeah, so I think it was 84 was the first time they came around to the drumstick, the legendary drumstick in Lincoln. Which,
so you actually saw the Mats when they really were.
Yeah,
the
absolutely,
Mats.
Yeah. You know, and that was, I remember going to see them, and they're our age, you know, which I thought was really cool. And then they get up on stage, and I remember, you know, Tommy getting on his hands and knees behind Bob, and Paul coming up and shoving Bob over backwards behind him, and goes tumbling almost off the stage with his guitar. And that was, to me, that kind of like just sums up who they were. You know, they were, at the time, they were just kind of like snotty kids, you know, and then they proceeded to kind of rip through a set that had partial covers that they wouldn't finish and drunkenness, and I just absolutely loved it at the time, you know. And then, you know, like Mark said, everything's kind of a blur, but, you know, I think I saw him a couple times at the drumstick, and I think they played the Student Union one time when I saw him too, when they were kind of getting commercial, and I'm trying to think if that was like Slim Dunlap.
Well, Slim came pleased to meet me for 87.
Yeah, so it probably would have been right around that time, I'm guessing.
That was Slim. I saw it.
Yeah.
Clicks. Yeah, it was Slim. So
yeah, and then saw him at Peony Park too, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know if that was the 87, because I think they played there a couple times, and I think
they played there from Pleased to Meet Me to the End, they kept playing Peony Park.
Yeah, so I know I saw him at least one time there with Slim, you know, and I moved to Atlanta in 89, so depending on when Atlanta was, I don't know when it was in 89. But yeah, so I probably saw him, you know, four times back in the day, and then went up to Riot Fest last year in Chicago, which was a good experience, other than the torrential rain pour and, you know, mud and everything else that went along with
that.
It. Yeah.
What about any of the solo guys? You've seen Paul?
No, you know, I saw Tommy at the Ranch Bowl in, was it 2002,
like,
maybe,
like
something like that?
One third of the crowd that was there at that two.
It was, yeah, that was not well attended.
There was like 15 people.
Tommy Stinson?
Yeah.
The Bash and Pop album I thought was really good. His Bash and Pop stuff,
yeah.
You remember that.
No,
and those real, that's a real nice pop sensibility, and, you know, showed he had some talent too, I think.
But never, you never saw Westerberg solo?
No, never saw Westerberg solo. Wow. Never saw any of the other guys.
There's no Slim.
No.
The couch.
Yeah, and Billy Joe playing lead guitar and singing.
And so how was that? Because, like, I've seen some videos of it, and part of me thinks it's cool because Billy Joe Armstrong is a big rock star, and he does have a younger following, and maybe that'll transfer some people who are younger to be like, oh, why is this bunch of old guys that he's playing with? Who are these guys? And kind of look into it. But I don't even know if people do that anymore.
I mean, that's kind of how it was for me initially. Like I said, Billy Joe kind of cited Replacements as an influence on his music, I guess, early on. And so that it was really cool to see him play with them. And kind of, like Chip alluded to, like Paul just lay there on the couch, was just having a great time. Not really
serious. Now, was Armstrong up there the whole set?
I would say 80% of the set, yes.
And they still had the other guitar player, too.
Yeah.
All we're on a bar, she's all we on strike, starting up the aisle. Big deal, you get to fly. You ain't nothing but a waitress. You ain't nothing but a waitress in the sky. We can have Bob hold up here in an instant, buddy. You ain't nothing, wishful thinking.
that band 17 years, longer than he was ever in the Replacements.
Right, he's more of a fixture
and,
in that.
And
than...
longer than Duff McKagan was even in Guns N' Roses. So it's sort of like,
crazy.
It's hard to kind of hold that against him. You know, even though I like Guns N' Roses, but I mean, I think it's always been strange to me that he was in that.
Well, up until the you know the Replacements reunion, that was his paycheck. You know, I mean that,
it was.
That, that kept him off of.
I think
going
he was listed
and,
as musical director yeah. too for the band.
Oh,
he
really?
Was. Yeah. Yeah, he was like in charge of the. Well, you know, because they don't rehearse with Axl Rose. That's the weirdest thing, is that they rehearse as a band, and then Axl's like separate. I don't know. I don't get that. But frankly, so like Tommy's in charge of the band when the band is rehearsing. It's like the band.
It's whatever. Weird.
Yeah, I think it's pretty ridiculous.
So when you were seeing, was there a small crowd for them, and then did the crowd come over once they felt it's, like Billy Joel was up there?
That, yeah, and that, like the whole theme of Coachella is all these different guests. Right. Like Pharrell brought out Jay-Z and Usher, but so you can sense that tweets started getting out that Billy Joel started them. But initially, it was probably 20, 30 people in a row, and then. Yeah. Like a real empty area in front of the sound booth. Or,
well, the first weekend, too, I mean, there was like 300-400 people is what I read.
At you the know, first weekend?
The first in Coachella, right? Yeah. There's like 300-400 people, which, you know, the Dayglow kids, you know, it's, Coachella's a different kind of thing.
I also saw Riot Fest, I forgot to mention that, but the Riot Fest was packed as fuck at Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in the VIP section, which was not very VIP at all.
No.
It was really pretty shitty, and it was over to the side, and it was not really that great. But I got there super early. I skipped the Pixies, who were on, like, the far stage, so I could stand there through the AFI or some shit and get
terrible.
There so that I would have, oh, they were awful.
Yeah.
So I could be there in time to get close up for the Replacements, and it was awesome. I was very glad I went, but that place was packed. And there were some serious Replacements fans at that show. I mean, I was there for 2 hours waiting, you know, with my friend and chatting it up with every single person who was there. Almost all from out of town.
I don't think I saw you there, did I?
No, we didn't get cell service in there.
Yeah.
So we were going to, like, meet at the place and text, try to figure out where we're at. And then I got no signal on my phone
yeah.
the whole time.
I randomly bumped into Aaron Shaddy there. I don't know if you know Aaron from Maha
yeah,
Festival.
Yeah.
We had the other Maha guys with us over in Denver.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and we were in the same VIP section, and it was just packed. And so, you know, my wife, who's 5'4", didn't exactly have the best view. Of it.
Here it's never ending, can't remember when it started. Pass around the last shit, filling up a room in jail. Being wrong to cry, I'm serving forever. Being strong's the kind I need help you with this fella.
Tasty, David.
So if being afraid, crying, the singing falling down the line.
Can you feel lose that cure thing, that vibe? That it's like I feel like Robert.
Quitting school and going to work and never going fishing. Water all around, it's too late to learn to swim now. Being wrong's a crime, I'm serving forever. Being strong's your kind, I need help you with this feather.
Came back. Came fucking back, man.
What's your favorite Replacements record?
for me, it's Let It Be. You know, I mean, that was the one for me. You know, and I just
even still,
yeah, that's the one. If I'm going to throw it on, I like to. That's the one I like to listen to. I really do.
Let it be. I go back and forth between Tim and Pleased to Meet Me. Even though Let It Be was what I heard first, I really like. I finally was into the Replacements, as you know, like a little bit later. Like I think by the time Pleased to Meet Me came around, it was a little bit. I had friends that liked them too. It was like party music. It was something like that. For me, I'm going to go with Pleased to Meet Me. I'm going to go with Pleased to Meet Me, even though that's not the original lineup.
I really like Tim as well, but the production value on that album, I could never get old. I mean, it was just kind of, like, Bastards of Young is still one of my favorite anthems.
It was very, very thin.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know how it got like that. Favorite album?
Pleased to Meet Me.
It's just nonstop hits on that one. Yeah. You know, it blows by a little fast, but it's just great. And I mean, that's even more raw than Tim, and the whole thing was like, well, they got rid of Bob because they wanted to be like more serious or something like that, and then they come out with Pleased to Meet Me, which just seemed like a whole lot less serious, you know? But I don't know, that was my thing.
Was that all Slim's playing on that record, or was that still...
Slim was not on the record.
Not on the record, right? I mean, that was all...
It was all Paul and all the guitar
That's what records. I thought, yeah. So I think that's probably one of the reasons it was a little
And then rough. Supposedly the symphonic stuff on Can't Hardly Wait was done after they left the studio, thinking that the sessions were over, and Jim Dickinson put that stuff on. And apparently Westberg's been pissed ever since, but I think it's cool.
What's that?
The end of Can't Hardly Wait, with the extra production, the string. I mean, they pulled a Beatles Let It Be on them.
You know what I do? I remember now that I do remember seeing him at the Student Union, because I remember being like right up in the front row, and I remember it seems like Paul. I mean, that was kind of a time where the major label was starting to push him a little bit, and so I remember standing right up front there, and he was playing Answering Machine, and I was like just a horrible hack guitar player, and just kind of looking and trying to figure out in my drunkenness how he was playing that song, and never did figure it out. So
now
that's my favorite song, Answering Machine.
Yeah,
favorite song is Answering.
There's
Machine.
An urgency to it that I love it.
It's just hitting the guitar, and it's just got such an edge to it. Yeah,
yeah. No, that song is an amazing song. God, my favorite though. That would be tough to say.
I'm IOU.
IOU. Let me think here. No, that's a good one. There, Answering Machine is up there. I like I Will Dare because it's just pure pop perfection.
Yep.
I like Bastards of Young because I really like the whole meaning behind it.
Yep.
I like Here Comes a Regular because I know people like that. I've known them ever since I was in college, and that's a very relatable thing. So I don't know. I guess I'll go with I Will Dare, even though I've probably changed my mind in 10 minutes. But.
Whatever song's playing.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Have you ever met him? Any of the band members?
Just Tommy at that 2004 show. He was really cool. All 15 fans or whatever hanging out in the lobby and talking to him.
It was probably us three and the band Vago, who I think opened up for them. They're friends of mine. And Danny is...
And Rob from Saddle Creek, because he was there too.
Okay, and Danny specific. From Vago is a huge Tommy Stinson fan, so I think they weaseled their way onto that show. I've met Tommy. I've met Paul on the bus.
I have met Tommy a number of times. I have a friend who's a friend of his, so I've met him a little bit. And I met the entire band in 89 and had my infamous Paul Westerberg experience, which I told St. Vincent, because we had a talk about meeting our idols or whatever, and I mentioned it in this podcast, but this is a story that I will tell now for the purposes of this show, because it's appropriate to the Replacements. And it has been told back to me by people who didn't know that I was the subject of the story.
Really?
Okay. This is Pleased to Meet Me, and or not Pleased to Meet Me, I'm sorry. Don't Tell a Soul. It's May of 89, Replacement for Petey Park. And I got to, and I had a black and white 8x10 glossy promo photo, you know, that the record companies had. I brought it out to Slim. He signed it. Chris Mars signed it. Tommy Stinson signed it. Got my picture taken with all of them. They were all super cool. Westerberg's holding court at this table with a couple of girls standing around him. And I walk up, and I give him the photo and ask him to sign it, and he fucking rips it up into pieces and just chucks it in the air. And I'm just, like, devastated, right? This is my fucking hero, and he's such a dickhead. I can't believe he just did that. And everyone around is just staring, like, wow, did you see what he just did to that kid, you know? And that's what people have said, like, yeah, this kid looked like so devastated. And I was like, I was that kid. Yeah, that was me, dumbass. So then he goes to me, he goes, so what else you got? And I had a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, like I had a Musician magazine with them. I had some records and stuff. But I didn't really want to give him anything because I thought he was going to just fuck it up. So I begrudgingly gave him the Musician magazine, and he takes it. And then he, like, opens it, and he just starts signing his name, like, 20 times in the magazine, turning the page, signing it, turning the page, signing it. And then he starts talking to me about something. And, of course, I ask him a Kiss question. So I'm like, how come, you know, of all the covers that you used to do, why did you actually record Black Diamond? And he's like, well, when we were making Let It Be, we recorded, like, about 20 different covers. That was the one that I knew the most of the lyrics to, so that's the one that made it on the album. So it was totally insignificant, really. I mean, it was like, it was a song that they chose, but it was the reason it made it on the record. It was really just because that
he fucked
got
it
the
up
lyrics
the
most, right?
Yeah.
So then he was nice, and then I was totally torn about the whole experience. And then I posed for a picture with him. But no, that was my negative Paul Westerberg experience. And I've never met him since. I've never spoken to him or anything. Had the opportunity, and I kind of was like, I mean, I love this guy, but I don't want it to be
ruined
again
that road
because
before.
I've already been there. And, like, I got past it, obviously, because here we are 25 years later, and I still love the band. But, man, that was rough.
I still feel like there's an emotional chip on your shoulder, though.
I'm still pissed.
I don't know that you're fully recovered.
I want to tell him. And I may be going to the show in Arizona. They're playing a festival in Arizona in September, and there's a chance I may be able to get backstage. I'm debating if I get the opportunity, if I can corner Westerberg about telling him the story, or would that be just like some whiny thing I've been holding on to for 25 years, and he'll think I'm like an asshole for bringing
it up. He's like, get over it.
Yeah.
But it could be very cathartic for you.
It could.
Or he'll just mock
you
further.
Maybe he'd be super nice about it and be like, you know what, man? I remember that story. I remember that. I didn't know that was you, you know, or something like that.
You know, seeing him on stage during these reunion tours, he just looks happy, like he's having a good time, though, too. I mean, it's like, you know, it's not like a train wreck. It's not like him. I mean, obviously, you saw maybe something different, but we saw both. But, you know, when we were in Denver, I mean, they were having a great time, and they seemed to really be enjoying playing the songs.
How about Chicago? They were having a blast.
And playing with each other. So, I mean, I think he's probably... Although, again, Coachella, I mean, he was obviously telling them to F off. He's still got his,
attitude.
He still has
that attitude. He still doesn't give a shit, really. He's not there to impress you. It's like, if you like them for what they do, more power to you. He's into it. If you don't, like, fuck you at this point. I mean, I think he did have that period where he really cared, I think, what people thought. Like that sort of don't tell a soul into All Shook Down, the beginning of his solo career. And you can tell once he switched to that grandpa boy. That's when the switch turned, and it's like, you know what, that mainstream success is never going to happen. I might as well just do something that I like now and stop trying so hard. And everything he's made since then, the Grandpa Boy stuff, the solo stuff, you know, the stereo, mono, all of that shit has been so much better than his stuff he did right after the replacement.
I like that first solo record a lot.
Oh, I like it, and I like that.
But when Grandpa Boy came out, that was exciting again. It's like, holy.
Something different.
And it was kind of the internet was around, but it was pre a lot of the talking on the internet, communicating, so there was still a little bit of a mystery around it, you know? It wasn't so automatic. You had to put it on to realize, it's... Because I remember getting the promos at Homer's, and we put it on, and we're like, you know... We kind of had a feeling, or somebody had told us, or maybe a rep had mentioned it. But once you put it on, you're like, oh, crap, this is Westerberg going replacements. You know, he's going back to his, you know, roots, you know. Yeah.
Especially the full length with MPLS. I mean, that's just like, he's in on every instrument. He's even playing the drums, and he's not a good drummer. It's like all offbeat and stuff, but he's so fucking good. I mean, you saw at the California show, one of them, I think, they played Psychopharmacology in the set, which is a Grandpa Boy song.
You.
Oh, it was the second week.
Yeah.
And I'm proven wrong in my facts.
I'm looking at the set list now.
See, back in the old days with these discussions, we wouldn't have been able to look that up.
Damn kids.
Yeah. Kids and their internet.
First three songs were I Will Dare, Nowhere Is My Home. Then they did the Only Ones cover, Another Girl, Another Planet. And
Nowhere Is My Home, that's another song that I always wanted them to do. Because it was on the Boink album at the time. That was the only place you could get it. Remember that record, Boink? It was a UK import that had... It had that song unique to it, and then cuts off like Hoot Nanny and Stink and stuff. But it was that song was so brilliant, and they would never ever play it live. It was like Westerberg said he didn't even know it when someone I knew asked him. He was like, I have no idea how that song even goes or whatever.
And then they played 13 of the 16 songs with Billy. So
here's a good question: who do you think? So we're going to the Minneapolis reunion, their first hometown show. And I mean, my head is swarming with who's
going to
get up on stage with the replacement.
I don't care about anyone. I want Chris Mars to come up on stage, even if he doesn't play. I just want him to stand there with them and acknowledge that he was in that band. Like, I know he's an artist now, and he's great. His artwork is pretty awesome. I mean, if I had a spare $25,000, I would totally buy one of his pictures, no question. However, you know, it's tough when you, I mean, they can't get Bob because he's dead.
Right.
They can't get Slim because he's incapacitated and he can't play anymore. But Chris just doesn't want to.
Right.
And that's sort of why it's sort of like, I just want Chris to want to, at least once.
Yeah, I've got the infamous, my buddy John in Minneapolis, one of his buddies is friends with Chris Mars, and he said he can't stand Westerberg. I mean, and it's just, there's like a hurdle he can't get over.
It turned out a damn lot of money, so obviously he doesn't like
it. Monetary figures. I know, I heard three Riot Fest dates was $1 million.
That's what I've heard too.
But now they're not getting that.
They're not getting that. And Coachella, although Coachella has, you know, they have fuck you money. They have so much money. But they could have paid the replacements a lot of money to play in front of 300 people, which is, would almost serve them right, you know, like, I wouldn't feel as bad for the replacements playing for $1 million
cash
in front of 300 people. You know, I mean, why not?
It's
and they're only doing the festival circuit. They're not. There were rumors they were going to do an actual tour, and you know, do it like for real, like in smaller venues and stuff. But they're not going to do it. It's just going to
once you get that money and be able to just float around on a weekend and get paid like that, why would you want to go back on a bus? You know, I mean,
I'm saying Maha 2015.
They want it.
If they're still doing it, if
they
they're
want
still
it.
Interested.
As long as the price keeps,
the price is going down. By the time they're going to book Maha for 2015, their price tag won't be at, and the, you know, a third of $1 million.
Trey Brashear, are you listening?
Oh, yeah, he's listening. And they'll ask. They will. They probably ask this year. I guarantee
they'll want to. So anyway, back to the St. Paul show. I want to hear Chan Pauling from the Suburbs playing Androgynous because he played the piano on it, Androgynous on the record. So, and I'm a big Suburb. I was a big Suburbs fan back in the day too.
And the new Suburbs,
a lot of guys
stuff
don't know.
Great.
Yeah,
I mean, they've gotten back together. They sound really good. That new record's really good.
Yeah, I went up some a few years ago.
I want to see Dave Perner. I really do.
I do too. I'm with you, man.
I do.
Does he live in New Orleans now, or is he still in Minneapolis?
But why would he go up there? I mean, why would half these bands play shows around
Zeller?
You know. Well, yeah, I'd like to see Martin Zeller, but I don't think they might not even know each other, really. I don't know. So that was a different little scene.
Yeah. Replacements were already kind of a national thing.
I wanted to see Martin. I wanted to see the Your Daddy's open up. That's what I wanted to see. But I wish they would have got an older band to open up.
Who's opening up? I don't even know.
Well, it's the Hold Steady and Lucero, which they're both great bands, but, you know, I mean, God, I mean, Craig Ben's got to be pissing himself to get to open up.
Oh, yeah.
He's
more excited than I would be to see Hold Steady. No, I want Chris Mars. I mean, you know, because he did, there was that photo that circulated of him and Westerberg when they signed a bunch of those songs for Slim stuff, and they were in the same room together, sitting there, like, not looking like they hate each other, you know, because Westerberg, you can generally tell in his face, like, if he just is not into it. He doesn't even have to play. I just want him to come up on stage and say, hey, this, you know, Chris Mars or whatever, and let him take a
soak
bow
it
or,
in.
Play with a tambourine or some shit. I don't even care. I just want him to get up there. You know, that's what I would like to see. But I'm not going to be at that show.
I'm shocked that it had a show.
I thought they'd have a show.
I thought they would too, but
I'm surprised they didn't do a surprise show, like First Ave or something. Just unannounced, you know.
I'm surprised they didn't before the Riot Fest shows. I think everybody was expecting that in Minneapolis. I mean, I'm sure everybody in Minneapolis' replacements band was trying to find any clue as to when they're going to play First Avenue, you know. But,
yeah,
they never did that. And, you know, who knows? They might do something like that before this show, too. But I don't know. I'm going to be looking around around the...
Absolutely,
the venues around there to see what's happening.
You'll see
you know,
the Minneapolis celebrities in the crowd. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know all the people from except for Prince, of course, he won't be there. But
hey. Every
other Minneapolis music celebrity, the Jayhawks and, Kat, or probably not Kat, but Lori from Babes in Toyland. She'll for sure be there. Yeah. Other guys, a lot of different bands, obviously the Suburbs
guys. Plus, you know, there's a lot of, you know, younger Minneapolis bands, you know, too. I mean, like, I see Jerry Messersmith there, who I'm a big fan of. You might see, you know, who knows who's going to be out there, you know. So it's kind of like the to-do in Minnesota this year. It's the special thing. So I'm excited for it.
I am too.
Yeah. Well, I'll maybe see him in Arizona, and that could backfire because it could be like an L.A. kind of crowd.
What's that festival called?
I don't know. It's in Tempe, I think. Is that near Phoenix?
Yeah, that's where Arizona State is.
It's like September 27th.
Because their influence was probably a lot more Midwest than it was anywhere else.
Was.
A lot of those bands, you know, Twin Towns.
That whole Minneapolis scene when I was in college at the Drumstick, you'd catch all the Minneapolis bands coming through to Kansas City, Denver, you know, heading east, west, north, south out of there. So that's where we get all the great bands.
Did they ever play places like the Howard Street Tavern or anything like that?
I don't remember them ever playing there. I mean, I think they played the Drumstick a couple times.
And then were there any other, like, really underground places in the early 80s in Omaha? I mean, I know that R.E.M. played a whole bunch of, like, underground
shows. Well, they played the 20s, and then they played the Howard Street.
Okay.
R.E.M.
Okay.
Digital Sex.
The 20s at the strip club?
Yeah.
But I remember seeing the Suburbs at the 20s.
Really? Digital Sex opened up for R.E.M. at the 20s. Yeah.
Was it a strip club then, or it was just a rock club at the time?
It was called the 20s. I don't know.
It was a strip joint at the time.
I wasn't around.
Yeah.
I saw the Suburbs there. It was one of the weirdest shows. It was like a Halloween show.
Oh, nice.
It was did you find it?
Bizarre. Bizarrely fun, though.
It didn't look like a very good festival. Like, it was one of these deals where I was going to fly in Saturday morning. They play Saturday night.
You showed it to me. It looked horrible.
Yeah, it was very bad. It was like nobody else good on it except for the Replacements. Well, I don't know. Unless anyone else has gotten any sort of anecdotes or anything. I mean, we've been talking for almost an hour, so I think we've got...
You know, it was so natural. It was just like we were sitting in a bar having a couple of drinks talking about the Replacements and all, you know.
It's like what we would have done anyway.
Well, all right, gentlemen. I'm going to turn off the mic.
Off to St. Paul.
Well, there you go. Hope you got something out of this discussion. I think it was pretty interesting. As you see, I interspersed bits of music from the reunion shows. Those are all from the various shows, either the first two nights of Riot Fest or a couple of the band's appearances at Coachella in 2014. And I'm going to close out the show right now with the band's performance of I Will Dare, which I said at the time was my favorite Replacement song when I was doing the interview. I've already changed my mind. I think today I'd probably say Bastards of Young, or perhaps Color Me Impressed, maybe Skyway. I don't know. But I Will Dare is a safe, not a safe choice. What am I talking? I'm correcting myself here. It's a great choice. And you know what? This is a great version of it from just a few months ago in California at the Coachella Festival with Paul, of course, being his usual humorous self. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. This has been the Dark Stuff Podcast.
Greatest Replacements cover band. We are the Cements.
Data is complete.